Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. It's hard to wake up in America on any given day and not hear about the latest policy or decision made by President Trump or someone in his administration. And as we near the end of his first 100 days in office, there's been a lot to talk about. And virtually every American citizen, even those undocumented Americans and visitors in our country, have been impacted directly or indirectly. On today's exchange, we're diving into an issue that has somehow gotten lost in the barrage of executive orders, flip-flop decision-making, mass firings, DOGE cuts, and a sea of scandals that have plagued this administration. The issue is nuclear weapons and the race among nations to own the best capability to wipe out humanity. On Saturday, April 25th, Peace House of Ashland is hosting a symposium at Southern Oregon University, co-sponsored by the Department of History, Economics, and Politics. The event highlights the new nuclear arms race and the process of upgrading and modernizing nuclear arsenals of the world's nuclear powers. My next guests are deeply concerned about peace. Last year, Trump told Sean Hannity of Fox News that nuclear weapons are the biggest problem we have. My next guest might agree. But today, instead of reducing America's arsenal of nuclear weapons, the Trump administration is spending even more to upgrade them. Joining me in the studio is Michael Nieman. He's a member of the board of Peace House in Ashland and a retired professor of International and African Studies. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Joining the conversation by phone is Kevin Martin. He's president of Peace Action and the Peace Action Education Fund. He's also the former director of Project Abolition, a national organizing effort for nuclear disarmament. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you for having me on.
So, Michael, before we discuss the symposium and this huge issue of a new nuclear arms race, tell me more about you.
Well, first, a slight correction. It's Friday. The symposium is Friday the 25th, not Saturday.
Saturday
will be the 26th.
I'm sorry. Thank you for that correction.
I grew up in Germany and lived there until about, 24, 25, and I became involved in what was then called the NATO two-track decision to deploy medium-range nuclear weapons in Western Europe, including Germany. Mm-hmm. And there was a movement there called the Krefeld Appeal, started by the Green Party and other political organizations to mobilize against that deployment of new nuclear weapons. And
what was it called again?
The double-track or dual-track decision by NATO. And so that was to negotiate with the Soviet Union, but also deploy medium-range nuclear weapons.
Okay.
And so that's how I got involved in sort of the nuclear debate. And fortunately, I think there was a mass movement on this side of the Atlantic as well called the Nuclear Freeze Movement. And I think there was enough public pressure or public support for serious nuclear disarmament talks that they then proceeded. And, if we look back in the 1980s, there were some 70,000 warheads all over the world. And today we're looking at about 13,000 warheads. So there has been a significant reduction.
Okay.
So I've been involved ever since then.
Okay. And so, Kevin, where are you calling from?
I'm just outside Washington, D.C., and my story is a little bit similar, getting involved about the same time, the early 80s. And I'm glad Michael started with that because we're going to get into different, issues about what's going on, how are our tax dollars being used, et cetera. But it's always people power that makes the difference. And at that time, made a big difference on both sides of the Atlantic. Ronald Reagan basically mobilized me. I thought he was crazy enough to start a nuclear war. And the pushback both in Europe but also in the United States was such that at one point, he and Gorbachev, the leader of the Soviet Union at the time, became very close to talking about getting rid of all nuclear weapons. And Reagan couldn't do it because of his attachment to Star Wars so-called missile defense, and that's one of the issues we could get into as well. But the point is that it's always people power that makes a difference, not the politicians.
That's interesting. Star Wars, now we have a space force. So I wonder what how that intersects. Michael, what are we going to learn at this symposium?
I think at the primary purpose of the symposium as we envision it is to inform people about the threats that we are facing with this nuclear modernization program that's happening in the United States, but also in all the other nuclear weapons countries. Secondly, we want to inform people on how to get involved in this effort, because as Kevin just pointed out, people power is really crucial. And I think thirdly, it's to just get people out of this sense that nuclear weapons aren't an issue, because they are. And I think people have forgotten that nuclear weapons are a serious issue that need our attention.
How many nations today on nuclear
weapons? Oh, geez. So there's the United States, Soviet Union, China, France, not Russia, not Soviet Union. I'm dating myself here. France, the United Kingdom, North Korea, Israel. Have I forgotten one, Kevin?
India and Pakistan.
Oh, yes, right. India and Pakistan. Thank you.
So how many is that? What, eight, nine?
Nine.
Yeah, nine.
Nine nations.
Mm-hmm.
And decades ago, it was basically just
two. Well, and then China came, was sort of a late arrival. Well, and again, France has its own sort of nuclear force. The British nuclear weapons are semi-controlled by the United States, because they are actually United States manufactured weapons in their submarine.
Well, you mentioned that this isn't an issue that's really top of mind, but it ought to be. And when voters go to the polls, they often do so with a mindset of top priority issues they care about. But nuclear proliferation isn't ever one of those issues that I can think of. Yet whoever's put into the Oval Office is going to be in charge of a stockpile of the most dangerous weapons on Earth.
Yeah.
Why do you think that this isn't a larger priority for Americans?
I think that's partially, in my opinion, the success of the disarmament movements and the negotiations that have taken place between the then Soviet Union and then United States. So there has been a reduction of nuclear weapons. Like I said, from some 70,000 warheads to some 13,000 warheads. And that's a massive reduction. And so in many ways, that's a sign of the benefit of arms control negotiations. But the problem is that it has stopped there and it hasn't gone any further. The last arms control treaty, the New START treaty, expires in 2026. And there haven't been any new nuclear arms control negotiations.
That's next year.
In the pipeline. Yeah. There's nothing new has been negotiated.
Okay. Well, so Kevin, there was a time decades ago when Americans were fearful of nuclear weapons. And of course, the arms race between the U.S. and Russia was a big issue. But now we're friends with Russia, and talks with Vladimir Putin are the most frequent talks that the Trump administration has with any foreign leader. Do you know if this issue ever comes up? I mean, you're saying that next year something has to be done.
Well, this is a problem that goes just beyond Trump. And in terms of nuclear modernization and spending money on nuclear weapons, $1.7 trillion over the next 30 years or more, it's a bipartisan or a transpartisan problem. Trump has talked about the possibility of nuclear disarmament negotiations with Russia and China, but China has consistently ruled that out and said that until the U.S. and Russia come much further down in their nuclear arsenals, it doesn't make sense for China. But I had another take on your question for Michael. And yes, it is partly the success of over time reducing nuclear weapons, but it is pretty astonishing the ignorance about the issue. I think it was 7 or 8 years ago, there was a public opinion survey, and it asked people in the United States, how many nuclear weapons do we have? And the average answer was between 300 and 400 nuclear weapons. That would have been true if they were in France, but the United States at the time had something like 6,000 nuclear weapons. So how could people in this country, and it's our tax dollars paying for all this, be so ignorant? And I think part of the issue, not only on the one hand, the positive success in bringing down nuclear warhead totals, but there's also just a really deep-rooted sort of the military-industrial complex, the war machine in this country runs on autopilot. It gets the majority of our federal tax dollars every year, and most people just really don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. Now, if I had the magic answer to why that is and could correct it, then the situation would be a lot better. But as Michael says, informing people, getting them resources to be better educated on these issues is very important. The other thing is people often respond to fear or fear of losing something. And I had thought maybe the scare in Hawaii a couple of years ago about the false alarm of a North Korean nuclear attack, and people were understandably freaking out in Hawaii, might have made some kind of a difference, but people just seem to move on to the next catastrophe or whatever it is, because that unfortunately did not have any kind of a lasting effect.
Well, it's interesting because Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex. My guests are Michael Nieman. He's a member of the board of Peace House in Ashland, and Kevin Martin. He's president of Peace Action and the Peace Action Education Fund, and he'll be the keynote speaker at the New Nuclear Arms Race Symposium, which is going to be on April 25th.
Friday,
mm-hmm. at Southern Oregon University. So, Michael, what do you want people to know? Since we're so ignorant, what do you want us to know?
I think I want people to know that there's a massive, massive expenditure coming on towards us. I mean, Kevin mentioned $1.7 trillion over 30 years. That's the cost of this modernization.
Where's that money coming from?
Well, from taxes and debt. Right? I mean, it comes right out of the federal budgets. And that's one of the things that is often forgotten. Even as we speak today, there's the most recent accounting on from Back from the Brink, which is sort of an organization, that if we had no nuclear weapons at all, we would save right now $110 billion.
Say that again.
If we had no nuclear weapons, if we just didn't have them,
right.
we would have an extra $110 billion available in the federal budget.
Well, another way to look at this
it?
Is the yeah. opportunity, the opportunity
$110
cost.
Billion.
The opportunity cost in health care, in yeah. affordable housing, in mass transit, and protecting the environment.
Yeah.
I would think it'd be the number would be much higher. I mean, if we're going to spend $1.7 trillion just
over,
to modernize.
Over 30 years, but the annual cost right now gotcha. Is $110 billion.
Gotcha.
And that money could be spent elsewhere much more productively.
I see.
And all kinds of independent studies show that when you put any amount of tax money into anything else other than military production, it produces more jobs, more economic activity. So it's not even just a one-for-one trade-off. The studies that I've seen over time, as long as they're independent studies, not done by weapons contractors, education is the best. If you take the money out of the military and instead put it into education, it provides 2.5 times more jobs. And then there's also more of a ripple effect in the economy.
So, Kevin, that's a good point. Now, let's take the reality. From what I understand, there's going to be an increase in the Department of Defense budget up to nearly $1 trillion, whereas
yes.
the Department of Education is going away.
Yeah.
So there seems to be, a disconnect.
I think the disconnect lies in part in the fact that the weapons contractors are heavy contributors to all congressional positions. I mean, for example, just between 2018 and 2024, Honeywell spent $20 million on contributions to elected officials. And so there's that. That's part of the military-industrial complex. There is a lot of money flowing that supports nuclear weapons. There isn't that much money flowing in terms of education or healthcare.
And we're about to lose the Department of Education
exactly.
as well.
Exactly.
Well, we have to take a short break. My guests are Michael Nieman, a board member of Peace House in Ashland, and Kevin Martin, president of Peace Action and the Peace Action Education Fund. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Michael Nieman, a board member of Peace House in Ashland and retired professor of International and African Studies, and Kevin Martin. He's president of Peace Action and the Peace Action Education Fund. He's also the keynote speaker at the upcoming symposium on Friday, April 25th, at Southern Oregon University. Before the break, we were talking about the need for more education about nuclear weapons. Kevin, what's the difference between the nuclear arsenal that America has stockpiled today versus the nuclear arsenal that's being modernized? How would you describe it?
Well, I said before, it's kind of the military-industrial complex or the war machine sort of operates on autopilot. But another way to think of this, when they talk about modernization, that sounds like a good word. Modern, we want modern. It's really an upgrade in the potential to devastate all life on the planet in terms of being more prepared for nuclear war. And that's true that Michael said all the other eight nuclear states are also upgrading their nuclear weapons. And so it's not a surprise. It's a monkey see, monkey do arms race, although monkeys wouldn't be so foolish, I don't think. It's not just the danger to the planet, it's the opportunity cost of why we don't have universal health insurance in this country. Why don't we have any county in the country has enough affordable housing, mass transit, building out the green economy, et cetera. You can look at any of those. And I think people would prefer those. But the corruption of money in politics, the big weapons contractors, Northrop Grumman, General Dynamics, Boeing. A lot of people don't think about Boeing because they think of them just as commercial aircraft. They're one of the biggest weapons contractors. Lockheed Martin, they all are laughing all the way to the bank, even though a lot of what they do is incompetent. And I actually wanted to talk about a few of the weapons programs. But I think people power has to get organized to overcome that special interest power of the nuclear weapons makers and the weapons contractors.
Well, tell me about the destructive capabilities of a nuclear weapon that our government currently has ready to deploy versus if they modernize it, what would that do?
Well, most people don't have any kind of reference for this. The reference that most people look at is the Hiroshima bomb. And I've been to Hiroshima a number of times. And that bomb today is dwarfed by the weapons in our arsenal now. That bomb that killed 150,000 people leveled an entire city. The bombs we have today, the nuclear weapons, are tens or hundreds of times more destructive than the Hiroshima bomb. It's I don't know how anyone can actually fathom that, but that's the ratio. Tens or hundreds of times more destructive than the Hiroshima bomb.
Well, that sounds kind of crazy to me because if you're talking about a bomb that could level an entire city decades ago, generations ago, and now we're tens or hundreds of times beyond that, how do you deploy a bomb like that, level millions of acres and people's lives, kill all these people and animals and plants and everything like that, and then come back from that? I mean, there's no coming back from that because you're contaminating everything.
Exactly. There is no coming
exactly.
back.
Exactly. And that's why even some former military officials, now they won't say this when they're active duty military, but some military officials, including several that were in charge of the U.S. nuclear arsenal, came out after they retired for nuclear disarmament because of the dangers and the destructive power. But they also talk about it in terms of military utility, that a lot of this, the overkill is maybe the most succinct way to talk about the destructive power, makes the bombs themselves basically unusable. And a lot of military commanders don't want to be in charge of nuclear weapons. They don't want the responsibility. It's more of a burden to them than a weapon that could be justified or used practically. It can't be. So you're asking exactly the right question. Well, there is no coming back from a nuclear war.
Talk more about that, the maintenance.
Well, part of the problem is that, you know, the United States has what it's called a strategic triad. There are the land-based intercontinental ballistic missiles, there are the submarine-based missiles, and then there are the bombers. The problem is that, admittedly, those are aging systems, especially the land-based ICBMs. You know, they've been put in silos in the upper Midwest, you know, since the 1950s and so forth. And so at one point I read that a modern iPhone has more computing power than the systems that operate these missiles.
Oh, that's comforting.
But the point is, at one point, I think they were still using 8-inch floppy disks to operate them.
Yeah.
You know, so,
yeah.
But I think the point is, what can we do about that? And I think one of the things that we here in Ashland to sort of strategized after the last Hiroshima and Nagasaki observance was that we should just abolish the land-based ICBMs. Daniel Ellsberg actually suggested that. He said they are the most critical, the most risky weapons because once they are fired, they cannot be recalled. Our enemies know exactly where they are. You know, so the president has 30 minutes to make a decision to launch these. 30 minutes after a warning. That's it. And so go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say we may have an opportunity for progress on that because the new Sentinel missile, which is being developed by Northrop Grumman, is a failure. They can't get any part of the system right. The bomb factory or the factory where they're supposed to assemble these in Utah had an explosion the other day. It's way over budget. Yeah. And so we think there's a chance to cancel this new Sentinel missile. And rather than just rely on the existing Minuteman missile, Michael's exactly right. We should get rid of that leg of the triad. And I'll just mention two other things that I think could help spark a renewal of interest and opposition to nuclear weapons. And there are all kinds of positive proposals out there, and I wrote about some of them in the piece that's on the Jefferson Exchange website. The United States may move towards nuclear weapons testing again, which we haven't done full scale since 1992. That would spark outrage both here in this country and around the world. And the other thing, I mean, we talked a little bit about missile defense. Trump is talking about he wants a Golden Dome missile defense over the country, and the term Golden Dome, and they have a big peace department there. But this Golden Dome missile defense, which won't work and will be just a huge waste of money, guess who is maybe the front runner to get the contract for that? It's Elon Musk and his SpaceX. So if you have things like this that alarm people, those are probably more likely to spark opposition to nuclear weapons than all the positive things that my organization, Peace Action and Peace House and others, we have all kinds of positive proposals for how to do this better or to get rid of nuclear weapons. But most people, you know, respond when there's a threat. And they also, they respond to corruption. So the idea that Elon Musk might be in charge of supposedly building this Golden Dome missile defense in the United States, I think that would provoke a lot of opposition.
Well, people have been responding to a lot of threats, a lot of corruption, and we've seen the protests all over the country, hundreds of thousands of people. No one's talking about nuclear proliferation.
Well, I think, you know, the slogans of the day are fraud, abuse, waste, right? Well, nuclear weapons programs are the primary places to find those. It's not just that the...
So we should get Doge.
Yeah, we should get Doge into that. Yeah, I mean, that would be a good start. I mean, why is it that the new missile, the Sentinel missile, is so severely over budget that it triggered the Nunn-McCurdy Act? Because it was 30% over budget. The newest submarines built by General Dynamics, the first one, is already millions over budget. The plutonium pits that need to be built. Again, millions over budget. And there was just crazy things happening. Like there was a $500 million mistake in the Oak Ridge T-12 plant because the contractor made the building 13 feet too low. That cost $500 million.
Oh,
so that's
word.
Kind of fraud and waste we should be focusing on. And I think that kind of fraud and waste would get people's attention as well.
Okay, well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Thank you both, Michael and Kevin.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Yeah.
My guests were Michael Nieman, a board member of Peace House in Ashland, and Kevin Martin, president of Peace Action and the Peace Action Education Fund. They're leading a symposium on the new nuclear arms race hosted by Southern Oregon University mm-hmm. on April 25th. That's tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.